I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I explore the subject of fame by talking to people who've experienced it themselves and ask them how it has affected their own journey as well as the lives of those around them. My guest today is comedian Lou Sanders. Lou is the champion of season 8 of Dave's Taskmaster and has also appeared on The Late Late Show with James Corden in America, Live at the Apollo and QI on the BBC, Travel Man This Way Up and 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown for Channel 4, and Roast Battle on Comedy Central amongst many other TV appearances. Lou has also been a mainstay at the Edinburgh Fringe with her 2018 show Shame Pig and a 2019 follow-up Say Hello to Your New Stepmummy, both selling out and receiving rave reviews. Lou also has a podcast of her own called Cuddle Club that I can highly recommend you subscribe to as soon as you possibly can. Lou's also been a friend of mine for years and is one of the great humans on the earth, so I'd like to give a huge, almost famous welcome to Lou Sanders!
Whoa! Hello, baby.
How are you?
I'm not used to seeing you in a professional capacity, so that was nice to listen to the intro. I thought both of us sound good in this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're not even seeing me in a professional capacity. It's all audio.
Audio, which is a shame. I thought you might want to whack the old video on as well to see an old friend, but I guess not.
No, I don't have the technical capability to do that, and it would involve much hard work and editing, which you probably remember from having known me for years. I'm not the hardest worker. For the audience, Lou and I have known each other, by my reckoning, since circa 2006, when we worked at the BBC Entertainment Development Department together. Lou, what do you remember of those halcyon days?
Well, it's funny. Hang on, I just need to open a drawer. Okay. It's funny that I should say I'm not used to hearing you in a professional capacity. And the fact is, I used to work with you.
I think that sums it all up.
Yeah. You weren't bad, but you weren't like a little psychopath. You know, so we were working with some really driven psychopaths, and you definitely were more laid back.
I think it's fair to say. I feel like it's worth asking, you know, obviously everyone knows you as a comedian now, but what kind of jobs, other than that TV job, what jobs led to that? And is there any pattern forming in terms of things you did that eventually...
Can I just say, I feel like an intruder being on a podcast. Was it called Almost Famous or something?
It is. It's called Almost Famous.
Nobody knows who I am, but I guess that fits the brief, Almost Famous. That fits the brief.
We will get to that, because one of the questions I will ask is, are you famous? You've just answered it. But I will say, Lou, pretty much 98% of the people I interview say they're not, and then I find myself arguing as to why I think they are. So I'll do that. But in terms of jobs you did before comedy, is there any pattern forming in terms of things you chose to do?
Yes. There's a pattern forming in I got sacked from them all. That was the pattern. I got let go at the BBC. That was embarrassing. But I was in the wrong department because it was like Fact Dent, and I didn't ever watch any of the Fact Dent shows. Mm. And they were all like whacking off about all the shows, and I was like, oh, I don't know, I was out. And I wasn't very good at my job, I don't think.
How did you get the job in Fact Dent if you don't like factual entertainment shows?
I was working with Sharon Stansfield, who's great. I love her. She's a producer, very talented. And we were working together at a different at Leopard, and you could not do anything you wanted there, but it was more like just come up with any ideas. And then we got on and she thought I was good, so then she got me the job at the BBC. But I think also we joined quite a stressful everyone was very stressed there at that time. So I think it was It was a difficult time to be good anyway, really. That's what I told myself. Yeah, but yeah, it's too difficult to be good at this time.
And it was, I remember it as being, because I remember I joined, I think you were already there when I joined, and I remember you telling me that you'd started doing stand-up and me being very envious and jealous. So was that about the time where you started doing it? Is that right?
I think so, yeah. And I was basically trying to, yeah, too many plates as well spinning, which is what Sharon said as well. Like, because I was doing stuff in my joke band and then stand-up and then that. They were all like creative endeavours, and I don't know, I certainly need to pursue one of these things, you know, like I don't think I'm going to be the best TV producer, and my heart wasn't really in it.
Yeah.
I definitely am not going to be the best musician because of talent. Well, I'm not going to be the best comedian either, but at least it's something, like, at least you can be mediocre.
And so it took me many, many years until pretty recently to even admit out loud that I think I even got into TV just because I was hoping at some point someone would say either you're a great writer or you should be performing or something like that. Is there any similarity in your journey?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, it's like the people that work in model agents on reception are always really fit. And you're like, well, yeah, like they've obviously gone, like they don't want to say, like, I think I could be a model, but they sort of hang around that area so that they're snapped up, kind of. Yeah, I guess. And then, yeah, I think a lot of people working in TV are like that, aren't they? Even like, you get a lot of people, producers who are like 55 or whatever, and then they're like, oh, I'm going to actually present this show that I've done the format for, you know?
Yeah, but that never actually comes off except for Richard Osman. And that was a kind of luck out, wasn't it? I think the way I read it with Richard was nobody else could turn up on the day that they were doing the run through, and he just sat in, and then the commissioners were like, yeah, you're brilliant, you should do it.
Oh wow. And then I didn't even know that about him.
That was always my dream, like, honestly, because I used to be involved in loads of run throughs too, and I'd be like, maybe someone will spot me.
Yeah, you've sort of got to be your own. Very rarely do people, we're all sort of waiting, and it's the same with validation, I think. We're all sort of waiting for someone else to give us the go-ahead or the validation, or the, you know, and it's like you really do have to do everything yourself, really.
Yeah.
Most of the time, like 99% of the time, I think, because then you're developing the skills and you're, like, there just isn't a shortcut, I don't think. There might be that, I mean, it's helpful being around it, like if you want to be a writer or something, then why not work on comedies and look at scripts and stuff, it's all helpful.
So these are called the isolation episodes of Almost Famous. How has the lockdown affected you and your career? How are you doing?
Well, I've ignored all the rules. I'm sort of barbecuing regularly with this. So, you know, for me, it's nothing. No, it's a ball ache, and it's depressing sort of going through your diary and like, seeing all the money you've lost and all the fun, like festivals and stuff like that. So it is a bullet, but then you have to sort of think, bloody hell. Like, I'm not that sad about it because I'm luckier than a lot of people, and you just sort of think it could be so much worse.
Yeah. Still alive.
Still alive, baby. So yeah, it's not a bad old life. And also I was so busy before lockdown and so exhausted. And I've had a right nice rest, actually.
Yeah.
And I've read 2.5 books. I mean, you couldn't say that before. I've never, they're my first 2.5 books.
So getting back to what we alluded to earlier, the question I always ask people, are you famous? You say you're not. Now, Lou, I would argue you've now been on, you know, one of the biggest talk shows in America, and you've been on all of the British big panel shows and stuff like that. So I guess my question is, when do you think, if you don't see yourself as kind of famous now, what would it take? What is fame? When would it be?
Well, I'm quite happy with where I am now. In like, I don't think I'd like to be really famous. Like, I don't think I'd like to be Denzel Washington, which is quite lucky because I don't think that will happen. But like, I don't think, or Victoria Beckham, or I don't know, because then your life is sort of blighted. So I'm really happy with the level it is now, which is no one knows who I am. And now and again, someone will say, oh, I liked you. You know, if I go on the Heath, now and again, someone will be like, Well, actually, it happened yesterday. This guy went, "Oh, Lou Sanders," and I thought I knew him. And I was like, "Hey, you know, you think you work with him or something?"
Yeah.
And he was like, "You're Lou Sanders," and I went, "Yep." And then he said, "Right." And then he's like, "I saw a show of yours or something like this." And he was talking, and I didn't know how long to leave the small talk, and I sort of stood around because I thought he was, and then he was just flailing like, "Right," and we both like it was awkward on both sides, and I thought, how did he recognize me with my glasses, like big old sunglasses on? Not because I'm anyone, just because I like my crow's feet to be a bit. And then I had a fucking great big tote bag saying "Vote Labia," which I plastered all around social media, and I was like, "Oh, he saw that. That's why." Yeah.
I guess it's worth asking how, you know, you say it's rare that people recognize you, but when they do, like an instance like yesterday, so your go-to is to think, oh, it's someone who knows me. It's not quite got into you yet that it's because you're visible in the public eye.
Whoops, my microphone dropped. Well, so the thing is, so I was thinking about this because, so in terms of people that recognize me, it's probably like on average one a week, not even that. And you know, you know me, I'm out and about, I'm not taking the lockdown seriously, I'm joking. but then you spend most of your life, well, I have spent most of my life not being recognizable at all, and it's only in the last year or so that I've started to have more like being on more TV shows. So of course you just think you're like I don't stick out in any way, you know, like if you're a sort of I don't know, like 20-year-old really hot tall like model, you'd be get people looking at you all the time, do you know what I mean? But oh, actually, even, you know, age is slightly irrelevant, but I spend most of my life not, you know, just being who I am, getting on with my own business. So you don't sort of clock that, then that's all you, do you know what I mean? Like that's your go-to and your status quo. So if things change ever so slightly, like they creep up over a few years, I suppose, it doesn't really feel like it's a thing, you know?
Yeah, but maybe
which I'm happy with.
Yeah, maybe that's because it's, you know, you've said it's the last year, so maybe it's gonna, you know, like an ever-increasing curve. Maybe it'll just creep up on you that it's happening a lot more often. I don't know.
I guess you sort of think, I do sometimes, because, oh yeah, I was just at Starbucks in the service station. I know, but there wasn't anywhere else to buy coffee. And I spilt coffee all down my front. And then I did like an Instagram story going, oh, like just a funny story about the coffee down my top. And someone went, oh, I thought that was you that I just saw. And I thought, oh yeah, right, I'm often behaving fucking mad. And then people do know who you are at the wrong moment. Like someone on Twitter said, oh, like it was things about like who they'd, you know, on Twitter like a week or so ago, it was like, oh, what, like kind of meaningless, it was kind of like a joke, like unimpressive run-ins with celebrities you've had or something right. Like that. It might have been framed more positively, but whatever. And then this guy like wrote like a load of people, and I was in there saying he saw Lou Sanders having a terrible time in the Apple shop. And because I never like think anyone will know who I am, I just sort of act how I'd normally act. I don't, you know,
yeah,
because we're, you know, of course you are going to act how you normally act, we're human beings, we're not like,
but does that mean that potentially if you got to a level of public exposure that you feel like you'd have to stop being yourself?
Well, I might eat nicer, and I might
what do you
I
mean like sort of, shut your mouth when you eat or something?
Yeah. Right. I might do stuff like that because I eat horrifically.
Do you, I've eaten with you before, I've never noticed that, and I'm a big one for not liking that.
Oh, really? No, I it's horrible. And then the other day, we were at a thing a while ago, me and my friend, and I suppose he's like a little bit, he's sort of like recognizable, I guess, but he sort of is more aware of it than I am, because I think he's like, I don't know. But anyway, someone offered me a brownie and I said, oh, they're vegan. And she went, no, I don't. I said, I don't think so. As a joke, like, oh, I don't think so then. You know, as like whatever I said, I can't really remember, something like that. And then he was like, well, I don't think that's how we act when we're you know, like recognizable, whatever. And I thought,
being ironic?
No, because he is recognizable, so he probably thought I was dragging him down. But then I would never think to like not do like dumb jokes that might be offensive or not, you know, do you know what I mean? Like
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, because I do this podcast because I grew up around some semblance of fame, etc. And I feel like I've been around enough famous people to know that actually it's quite rare for someone who is recognizable to do something that could be deemed to be quite diva-ish in public. I certainly know people who do, but that doesn't seem that common to me.
Yeah, when you are recognizable, you probably do it I was in Quick Fit and
wait, do you mean the advert?
No, but bang on brand, because I did do the advert for them a few years ago, didn't I? Yeah. And I was in Quick Fit and David Baddiel came in and I'd not met him. We just follow each other on Twitter.
Wait, while you were in Quick Fit, David Baddiel came in?
I was in Quick Fit and he lives near me and he was in there with his brother-in-law like swapping his tires or something. So I was in Quick Fit and then he came through the door and went, "Lou Sanders, we follow each other on Twitter." And I was like, "Hello." And he'd just done Taskmaster and I did the series before, so we knew who each other were. So, and then we had a nice old chat. But before that, and that's the nice side of it, you feel like you're friends with people you don't know just through social media, but that's like everyone. But before that, I was kicking off in Quick Fit a little bit and
did you say I've done the advert for you?
No, but they had some ridiculous thing and I was like, oh god, why is it like da, 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 being a bit of a brat just because like is overpriced or whatever. I can't remember what it was now. And then this guy went, "Oh, you're Lou, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, how do you know that?" And I suddenly thought, fucking pipe down. You should know, you know, not to be a brute. I wasn't really being a brute, but everyone, come on. Like, there's a sort of opinion that if you're on TV, you shouldn't ever get, like, slightly annoyed about anything. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because they think we're all millionaires and, like, yeah. You know. I can pay my mortgage for another 3 months and then I'm worried, basically.
I hope you're getting a mortgage holiday at the moment, no?
No, I didn't because I just moved in and I thought, oh, no, I won't. But anyway, so he said, "Oh, you're Lewin." I said, "Oh, yeah, how do you know that?" And I thought, how embarrassing. And he said, "Oh, I live in the same like block of flats as you." And then I recognised him. I said, "Oh, yeah, hello, mate." I felt so bad. I wasn't like being a brute. I was just like, oh, how come that's that then? And that's, you know, it's that kind of tone.
Yeah, I think it would be very, I think it's very unlikely knowing you that at any point, no matter how successful you get or in the public eye you get, it's very unlikely that you'll change your personality. I'm not sure you're capable of changing your personality.
No, but then, you know, everybody has a day where they sort of think, oh, I could have, you know, like I've said stuff to people before, and before they definitely didn't know who I was, who, like, you know, I'm talking about a while ago or whatever, but I said, you know, you say, I can't think of specifics, but where you say something to someone like, well, why is that or something, you know, in a service role or something, and then you go back and apologize. I can't remember, like, I've definitely gone back to someone to apologize going, I'm so sorry that came out, you know, wrong, kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's just we all do that. And I think is the fear, I guess, that, you know, you do it and then it gets into the press or something.
No, the fear is just
people think you're an asshole.
Well, no, you just want to treat everybody with and I think I do, like, I do think I see a human being rather than someone like, you know, who, I don't know. I can't think of an example.
I think what you're saying is that basically you're just being a good human person. You want to treat everybody as you want to be treated yourself. And that's got nothing to do with your public image or anything. So that, it would be more of a problem if you were saying, this is just because I don't want to get into the press. I think that would be more of an issue. So I wanted to ask whether you were a show off as a kid.
Can you imagine what a slow day the press would be having if they were like, oh, someone who was in a show once was a bit mean to someone at Quick Fit because
in my head it was more like, do you remember that page in Heat? I don't know if it still still exists, but the page where it's like overheard in the street, Lou Sanders having a go at Quick Fit.
But everyone has bad days. My friend, and I do love her, we went on holiday once to somewhere like, it's so embarrassingly white. It was somewhere like somewhere in Thailand that was like really nice for the first few days. And then we went to somewhere like, you know, more like budget. But the really posh place that we went to, or like quite posh, like we were at reception and I was like, oh my God, this is lush. I was skipping around. And she was like, why is the Wi-Fi not working? To the woman on reception, like, really arsey. Like, yeah. And I just thought, oh my God, this is why they hate the British. Like, you know, imagine like stopping off to a paradise island going, I don't understand why the Wi-Fi is not working and I need to do some work. And that, you know, that I could not bear that. That's, but she's a good person. She was just having a...
But that's interesting because I think that you've just brought up a thing that is so normal. Like, it's so normal, and you're worried about, you're slightly paranoid about how that comes across. But
wasn't me. That was
no, I know, but we've literally all done that.
I used to do it, like when I wasn't happy. I used to do stuff like that all the time because there's an inner thing inside you. Like, there's an inner monster that's kind of like, oh, I haven't got what I want. That's your kind of like, you don't know that that's going on until the years later when you unpick it. But for me, like, I wasn't where I wanted to be and I was really sort of unsettled inside. And so I would snap easier about stuff that really doesn't matter. And I'm not saying like I'm cured now and I'm perfect, but it's a lot easier to be nicer when you're happier.
Yeah. And you've talked a lot, or at least I've read in the press quite a lot about, you know, how you used to drink a lot and how that giving up booze has changed your life. Is that linked to your happiness?
Yes. I would say, but I was happy before as well. But the more work I do on myself, I think the happier I am. But I was happy, but I don't think you can get rid of the shame. If you've got a drink problem and you're still drinking, you can't like even start to unpick the shame where you're still in the kind of you know, habit of every now and again getting whammo and doing the same things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm happier now.
From my experience of back in the old days, I never would have had you down as, say, being an alcoholic. I would have just had you down as being like, I think some people would describe it as being quite a sloppy drunk.
Yeah, but I think I went through phases.
Is there a difference though? I don't know if there is.
I think I went through phases all through my life. So I'd have like a good year or two. I stopped drinking before for like 2 years because everyone kept telling me I was an alcoholic. And I was like, well, then I'll stop drinking for 2 years. And then I'd always go back to it and then I'd always end up destroying like relationships and careers and stuff like that. But I think it's a funny one because you're not around it all the time, or you might see someone on a night out where they're not like causing trouble or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But I think if it's there, it's there. And I tried so many things, like drinking different things, only drinking at weekends, and I'd always come back to like ruining stuff. And so many people told me I was an alcoholic, and Well, I started drinking when I was 13 and I had like vodka under the bed and, you know, at university I was pissed every day. And do you know what I mean? So I think, so I don't think you ever lose that. You can put a lid on it for a bit. And sort of, there were certainly times like a year or 2 years at a time where I'd like had it under control. But if you don't say that you're an alcoholic, you always go back to it. And then, well, for me anyway, I can only talk about myself. And then, I lost so many jobs and like, yeah.
Where do you think that kind of self-destructive side of you came
it's
from?
By the way, it's funny that you say you didn't think it was a problem because you know, we used to work for this guy. I won't say his name on here, but you had slightly different people you reported into, but anyway, someone that we used to work for the BBC, my friend said she's now working with him anyway, and she said, oh yeah, he said about you. I said, don't ask him about me because I don't think I was very good. And she said, no, he loved you, he loved you. He said, you always came in stinking of booze, but he thought you were really fun. But I think he was a bit of a caner in his own way as well.
Well, if he loved him, he must have seen a bit of himself in you, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't remember, to be honest, I don't remember who you're talking about. The head of FactN, I can't remember who that was.
I'll tell you off air. but I think that it does go hand in hand with, so it's not just the drinking, you know, because like you say, sometimes I was fine and it's not like, I think there's different levels of alcoholism, definitely. And I just, like, you don't have to sort of throw away your whole life before you sort of go, oh, I'm going to stop drinking. Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, I don't know, but
do you think you'd have got to where you are now if you hadn't given up drinking?
No, absolutely no way. People didn't trust me. Are you kidding? Like, I remember asking Pasco once. I was like, why am I not like on TV and stuff when all the comics and come really, really funny and stuff? And she went, no one trusts you. She was really helpful actually what she said. She's like, people just see you as too much of a risk and, you know, you need to like kind of get more professional. And that goes hand in hand with drinking, because if you're drinking like that, in that way, it's you're not respecting yourself. You know, you're not respecting other people. Of course people aren't going to trust you. You're putting out a vibe of like, you know, a bit of a handful.
And so are we talking about turning up to gigs late, not turning up at all, turning up drunk, all of the above?
All of it. Yeah, all of it. Like, I threw a bottle at someone at Macfest, and like loads of people were asking for their tickets back. Another gig I was like hammered at. Like, you know, it's just like Macfest, I couldn't stand up. I threw a bottle into the audience and I still didn't stop drinking. There's so many occasions. And
isn't there some responsibility on the promoters to not let you on stage at that point?
No. You've got to take responsibility for yourself. And even if they stopped me, I still was that pissed. I still didn't turn up for work. I still got asked not to come on stage. You know, it's like, it's not, there's so many comics. It's like, who wants that on the payroll? And also for yourself, it's like, I'm glad I wasn't successful before I stopped drinking, because, you know, you see the comics that get it and then they lose it all because they're sort of chaotic inside or they haven't sorted themselves out. And, it, you know, success is hard to stick to that. And of course, there's, you know, there's always the ones that slip by. Like there's always, what's his name that's built a whole career on drinking and stuff. Oh, he drew me a picture of a dick once on a show. Johnny Vegas,
yeah.
Yeah. But I think I'd rather do it this way around. But and also for a woman it's different. I think they get judged more heavily if they're out of control and stuff. But and that's not me being like, I think it's true. But what's the question? So it took about 2 years as well after I stopped drinking for that to like filter down and people to think, oh yeah, she has changed and stuff. Because when you stop drinking you do all the other work as well. And once I was at Latitude and I was doing like the QI like live show, which isn't televised, it's just their live, and I met the producer and she said, oh yeah, I remember you nicked a pint off me at a gig and downed it on stage. I mean, of course they're not going to book me for this was like ages, and I was like, it's a different time, I'm not drinking now. And she was like, cool. And then someone else said, oh yeah, you threw a load of flyers at me at a gig as well. And I was like, of course these people aren't going to book me for a TV show, why would you?
Hi guys, thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with the amazing, hilarious, slightly shambolic, but in a lovely way, Lou Sanders. She's one of my favourite people, as I said at the beginning, and totally love this interview. definitely click on and download part two if you want to hear more from Lou, and would like to hear about the time where Lou and I had a little dalliance. And in part two, she'll tell you how she remembers it slightly differently to how I do. So definitely worth clicking on, and also to find out more about Lou's career and what her plans are going forward in both comedy and the world of altruism. Please do subscribe to the podcast, rate us, leave a comment on Apple Podcasts, and thank you so much for your support. Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.